Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
Welcome to Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, a Cubs-centric podcast brought to you by Good Karma Brands, ESPN 1000, and our friends at Arlington Toyota. We talk all things Cubs on this podcast, drops twice weekly. Hope you enjoyed our Ben Brown episode earlier this week. No guests today, so we'll do a mailbag. We'll go inside the clubhouse with some long audio clips to play, and we'll break down everything about your favorite National League ball club. I get the pleasure of being inside that clubhouse, and I can tell you firsthand, a lot of fun lately. I mean, that was a beatdown they gave the San Diego Padres. PCA coming off that incredible June. Dansby having this historic run, 26 runs driven in the last 10 days. Three home runs in the finale, 23 runs on Wednesday for the Cubs is, again, just a drubbing of the Padres. They are clearly better than San Diego, and I think they're better than St. Louis, and maybe they'll start to prove that this weekend and get some separation between them and the other wildcard teams, and then maybe turn to those Milwaukee Brewers, who they did pick up a game against over the weekend. Also, some good news on the injury front. Jameson Taillon working his way back. He'll start a rehab game this weekend in the minors. Daniel Palencia also starting to throw a little bit. So here and there, they're starting to get healthy. Can't have any new injuries. When you think of Matthew Boyd back, David Peterson in the mix after a nice debut, better days seem ahead for the Cubs, especially now that they're out of that offensive slump. I don't know about you, but I always thought they would get out of it because they were getting on base even when they weren't hitting with runners in scoring position. So to me, the offensive slump always had an end date to it. It just went on a little bit longer than anybody wanted. They weren't hitting with runners in scoring position, and they weren't hitting for as much power. Well, both those things are happening in a big way. And before we move on, just like I said on Tuesday, let's give some credit to that bullpen. Other than a blip here or there, they've been very, very good. Hollowell and Rollison and Webb, a lot of guys that many people don't know much about have come through for the Cubs during this stretch. There's going to be other moments where they struggle, but right now things are going well, both at the plate and on the mound for the Cubs. Now they've gotten back to 10 games over 500. As I mentioned, a very happy clubhouse. Earlier in the week when the soccer game was going on, there were shootout penalty kicks happening. Everybody was watching after the walk-off win on Monday. And then, you know, this historic Dansby run, everybody's happy for him. So a really good vibe happening in the Cubs clubhouse, not that dissimilar to what happened in April. May, of course, a little bit of a different story. So it's baseball, man. Three seasons within one. That's what you can have when you're a baseball team. You can look bad, good, bad again, and maybe good, bad, good again when we get through 6 months. That's how this thing works. So Cubs are rolling right now. Let's get to our first pitch. For my first pitch, I want to talk about hot takes, just hot takes in general about baseball, because, man, you can look foolish after making some big pronouncement in April or May. It'll bite you in the butt because things will change in June and July and then change back again in August and September. Let's bring in producer Jack McGrath, because I want to address one in particular, the Craig Counsell hot takes that happened early. He was a genius, then he was a bum. Now he's a genius again. I have a theory that is actually pretty obvious to, I think, the casual observer. You hear from the manager so much that you tend to have an emotional reaction to him. No other person in a baseball organization is required to speak to the media, which means the fans, twice a day, every day, throughout the regular season, the postseason, and spring training. And I think you end up with an emotional response. If the team's going poorly, you think your manager sucks. Team's going well, you think your manager's great. And to me, the answer is he competent or not? If he's not competent, he doesn't deserve the job. If he's competent, then don't live on this roller coaster with him. He's going to make mistakes, of course. But you just can't go up and down. I want him fired. Oh, no, he's great. I want him fired. I think he's great. Jack, here's my bottom line. Managers get way too much credit and way too much blame.
Yeah.
They're the caretakers. They're the voices. They set the tone. All that is true. They don't hit. They don't pitch. They don't coach the way the individual coaches do. They don't work with the players in the offseason. I mean, there's so many more things in an organization than the manager, but he gets all the blame and all the credit. And frankly, I judge them after 162 games or after the postseason. I look at the whole season in general, not any moment in time. That's my hot take about hot takes when it comes to managers, because it's funny seeing all the praise Craig's getting a month after getting all the hate, a month after getting a lot of praise.
Well, the thing with Council is it's very easy to look at a 10-game losing streak and just see his demeanor, how he's not very outwardly energetic, and say, is this the guy to get them out of the slump? And I think that's easy to kind of look at him and say and form those hot takes. But on the other hand of that, you have to remember the Cubs have a veteran at almost every single position. So how much does the manager truly matter to those veteran guys and getting them out of the slumps? Because as you said, they are the ones that hit. So I think it's easy with Council just because he's so laid back in his demeanor, whether that's like that way behind closed doors or not. It's easy to point to that and say, is this the right guy to get them out of the slump? Eventually it did happen, so he was the right guy to do so. But it's easy to look at that and point fingers and have some questions, I think.
I'll go to my grave believing this. If Pat Murphy and Craig Council switched jobs right now, there'd be no difference in the standings. In fact, Craig Council beat out the Cubs when he was the manager of the Brewers. So we have proof of it. We have proof of it. I do agree with you. Managing a veteran team versus a young team takes a different kind of vibe. And so sometimes you can have the wrong fit. I'm not saying that every manager is just, you know, you could put anybody in any dugout. It has to be a bit of a fit. Messages do get stale. Young teams versus veteran teams, you know, are different. Teams that don't have a alpha leader are different with, you know, have different needs with their manager. But in general, I just say competent or not competent. If he's competent, then fast forward me to the end of the season. I'll tell you if he had a good year or not. The other hot take I want to mention, though, when it comes to like players and this idea like benching them, not benching them, which we went through during the Cubs' recent offensive slump. For example, if you said Dansby Swanson should be benched for a period of time, there's a lot of people taking victory laps around you saying, see, Council was right, playing him through it all. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Maybe if Dansby Swanson was sat down earlier during his slump, he would have came out of it faster. Maybe if he was sat down for more than 2 days, maybe if he was sat down for a week, he would have came out of it earlier. We can't go back and replay things. I have no problem with someone that was asking for Dansby Swanson, who was hitting 175, to sit down for a while. That to me is not a hot take. Hey, this guy's hitting 175. I think he should take a week off. That seems like a normal take. Now, the question is, which is the better way to get a veteran out of a slump? Sit him for a week or let him hit his way through? Alex Bregman uses the latter as his thing. The only way through a slump is through it. The only way out of a slump is through it, meaning playing and hitting your way out of it. But we know days off can give guys time as well. So maybe Council handled Dansby Swanson perfectly. Maybe he was too late to the game. Maybe he shouldn't have benched him at all, even for 2 days, and he would have came out of it sooner. Like, we don't know. It's baseball. It's crazy. But to say now everybody that wanted Dansby benched for a few days is wrong, no, you don't know that. And by the way, while he was playing and slumping, they were losing games. How do we know Pedro Ramirez couldn't have come in and given them a boost? And maybe they win a few games while Dansby's working on his offensive slump outside of gameplay. So, like, you know, all we can go off of what's in front of us, and yes, Dansby Swanson came out of a slump, doesn't mean it was handled exactly the right way, but maybe it was.
Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
All right, let's go inside the clubhouse. I try to bring you some audio that I've gathered up over the last few days or so. You've probably heard a little bit from Alex Bregman, who did hit a big three-run home run the other day against the Padres. I don't think he's completely out of his slump. He's still taking some walks and getting some singles. We're not seeing a lot of slug. He's got to stop chasing. He mentioned that as well. I thought I'd play the extended version of Alex Bregman here and then comment on it. This is 3 minutes and 50 seconds. So I want you to sit back, relax, listen to Alex Bregman talk about a myriad of topics, including his now, I guess you could call famous thumbs down gesture, rounding the bases on that big home run. And then again, after he crossed home plate. Here's Alex Bregman.
Just that home run last night to come through that spot, just how did that feel for you personally?
Oh, it felt good. Put a good swing on a pitch over the middle of the plate. Kind of what we talked about, just swinging a good pitches and trying to hit them hard in the air.
You had, I think, mentioned before in like the week or so leading up that you felt like you were close when you make contact with a swing or on a pitch like that. Is it a moment where it feels like everything comes together?
I think it was the day before, honestly. I felt better. The last 2 days worth of work in the cage, it felt good, and we got a good routine going of working on the right things mechanically. So I felt like the 1-0 pitch the other day, my first at bat, was good and put me in a spot to swing a good pitches. I think I swung the bat like three times yesterday, which is more normal. I swing, put the ball in play, and swing a good pitches over the middle of the plate, and it's not there, it don't swing. So overall, feeling better.
Yeah. Is it important to you, people, to know what your work ethic's like, what your desire is, what type of person you are? Is it important for you to have other people know that?
Nah, not really. not really. I want to win baseball games, and I'm gonna do what it takes to win and help the team win, and
you kind of talked about how for you it's like you wanted it to look a certain way, that's why you watch all that video, and then it was more of a feel thing. Had you gotten to the point where like the look when you were in pregame work was where you wanted it to be?
It's getting there. At the end of the day, it's never going to look identical to, I guess, to any other swing I've taken in my career. But, just going up there in a spot where I can make a good swing decision and try and hit the ball hard in the air and be as repeatable as possible. That's kind of been the thing, just take a good swing and then hasn't been repeatable as much this year. But, this is all last night, so focus on today, honestly.
What is the thumbs down celebration?
Nah, nothing.
Not messaging anybody?
No.
So there you get an idea of what Bregman is thinking about his offensive game. He knows he needs to be better, and it looks like it might be coming. That three-run home run was a big one, but let's focus on the end there because that's the juicy stuff. Was he actually giving a thumbs down to anyone in particular when he rounded the bases, when he crossed home plate, when he put it on his Instagram story? I mean, there's a lot of thumbs down going on. And for him to say, no, it wasn't meant for anybody, very kind of curtly, like he didn't expand on it or anything, to me, kind of feels like it was meant for someone. Here's the one thing I wonder if he took offense to anything. It's the idea that coming off the ground ball in Milwaukee, where he didn't run hard, there was a little bit of an implication by people thinking that he didn't do that in part because he's frustrated with his offense. I think he might take a little offense to that, that he would take his poor offensive game out to the base pass. I think it's actually what he said, because what he said is up for criticism. I've had a bunch of soft tissue injuries in the past, and I don't want to get hurt. But in hindsight, I should have ran. Of course, it's always going to be in hindsight, because you never know when a guy is going to bobble a ball. But I think, if anything, he took offense to people thinking, oh, I'm frustrated at the plate, so I'm not going to run hard. Because that's one thing I think players take pride in. They separate their struggles. Base pass, at the plate, in the field. So that's just my guess. He got light criticism from the broadcast booth. I suppose light criticism from the media, and certainly some criticism from Cub fans as well. But I'm not sure who the thumbs down was meant for. Maybe it's meaningless, and this is all for nothing, but it's fun to talk about. All right, last thing, and this one is the most important one to me. I've been intimating this on previous podcasts, Dansby Swanson and his work with hitting coach John Mailey. Now, of course, they've worked together in the past, but it became more intensified over the last couple weeks, and it's coincided with Swanson's hot stretch at the plate. Granted, he wasn't as hot in Milwaukee, but he was still, I thought, having good at-bats. But certainly against San Diego, New York, and the New York Mets, the results came. Here's the extended version. I waited late after the game the other night, after the two-homer game, to talk to Dansby Swanson. Here's what he said about working with John Mailey.
The one thing that he's really done for me personally is just, like, I'm always my best when I'm just, like, convicted in something, right? Or I believe in something. And I think he's just, like, really, really been on me in a good way of just, like, walking me through it, you know, coaching me, not coaching me hard, but, like, holding me to a higher standard and just kind of creating an avenue of, like, work that I can believe in, to where it's not, you know, like, you can go into the cage and you can try and fix your swing, right? Like, you go to the driving range, you can, like, go there and try and fix your swing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also nice to be able to get to the point where you're like, I'm not in there trying to fix anything. I'm in there just trying to, like, groove my swing to repeat the same good thing every time. And, like, it starts to just show up in game because you're just doing the same right thing over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially that's kind of what he's done for me. And, you know, I straight up asked him. I was like, dude, just, I need you to, like, I may be 32. I may be close to 10 years. I may have had a lot of success in this game, but, like, I still like being coached. I still sometimes like having my hand held and walked through, like, with. And he was just the one that has been doing it for me lately. But all the guys, like, PP and DK, like, they're all so awesome and positive and consistent and supportive. And, you know, I think they all put their heads together and kind of just, like, said, hey, this is what we're going to do. And Mails was just the one that was able to kind of, like, relay the message to get it through to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's obviously made such a difference. Right?
Kind of speaks for itself there. I just love a good coach-player story, especially a veteran story. I love the idea of him telling Mailey, I'm 32. I've been in the big leagues a long time. I'm struggling. I need your help. And that's where I interrupted in the middle there and mentioned the Joe Maddon saying, because a lot of players, and I'm not saying Dansby in this case, there's just a lot of players that don't need the help if they're going well, but also kind of need to hit close to rock bottom to ask for help from the teacher. As Maddon would say, the teacher will appear when the student is ready. And in some ways, I think it does apply to Dansby. Not that he wasn't coachable or anything like that, but I think in this moment, he needed a special touch, and John Mailey provided that for him, and you're seeing the results. It's been fun to watch and a great storyline. Time for the mailbag, where you leave your questions and comments on YouTube, where you'll tweet my producer, and I bring them up on our next podcast. Last time, we had no mailbag because we talked to Ben Brown, so we'll do a supersize one now with Jack McGrath. Jack, where can they leave their questions?
Yeah, they can tweet me at JackMcGrath1000 or just leave them in the YouTube comments. I go through those after every episode, so I'll just go through the YouTube comments and we can answer those there.
All right, what do we got for today?
All right, so the first one from Jake. He says, why are the Cubs a more soft-tossing team than others? Is this something Jed likes? And I looked into the stats after we got this question, and the Cubs in average fastball velocity this season ranked 26th in the major leagues. Is there a reason for that, Jesse?
There's partly a reason for it. I think they would love to have velocity. Velocity costs money a lot of times when you talk about free agency. I think they like to find the diamonds in the rough, and I'll explain why in a moment. Those are cheaper, and you know you can spend elsewhere when you find a diamond in the rough that's cheaper. A lot of it, I think, has to do with their defense. They are comfortable getting players that maybe don't throw that hard because they have a good defense behind them. I do think you have to invest in it in the draft and develop it as well. And they haven't done a great job of that. But in general, I think that's it. We have such a great defense. We want out-getters. We want guys that can just induce weak contact as much as strike guys out. And if we're not going to pay for velocity, we'll use that money to sign Alex Bregman, to sign Nico Horner, to sign PCA. And so it's almost like a value play. We have something other people don't have, a great defense. They're spending on velocity. We're going to get some of these guys that can spin the ball and put the ball on the ground, and that's kind of how we're going to get the most out of everybody. But I think they do need to do a better job of drafting and developing some velocity, and they haven't done a great job of that.
All right. Question two from Corey here. He points out that some players have contract incentives tied to All-Star game selections. He says, based on this, do you believe MLB should revisit how players are selected for the All-Star game?
Yes, but I think they should revisit the voting process. Jack, do you know what the voting process is? Do you know what it is?
For starters, it's the fan vote where you have the first phase and then you have the second phase. I'm not sure. The reserve process, it's managers and players, right?
Let's talk about the voting part. Do you know the details about the process?
No, I do not.
Exactly. Did you know that an individual can vote up to five times in a 24-hour period? Up to five times. So that's really goofy. They've got to find a better way of getting to a true vote. That's the way I would put it. And I think allowing people to vote up to five times every 24 hours is pretty silly. So there's got to be a mechanism to get to a realer vote. Maybe you get one vote and that's it the whole time. Now people are going to say, well, you're going to use different email address. Well, make it a little bit harder. I mean, if you're so hell-bent on getting five votes in and circumventing the process, okay, fine. But if you're basically told you get your MLB account email address, you get to have one vote. You know, there's got to be a way to do it to limit the amount of voting that comes in from a single individual. That's the way I would go. I feel like it worked in the old days, you know, with the paper ballots. We had a better accounting from fans. So there's got to be a way to do it. But I would at least tell you five votes per person every 24 hours seems somewhat ridiculous. But I would not discount the fans completely.
Joe said, he points out that he says, it sounds like the pursuit of David Peterson took a few weeks, up to 6 weeks. Who else in that time frame have the Cubs been engaging on?
Okay, so I think there's a misunderstanding about the David Peterson thing. The Cubs started to have injuries early on. At that point, as I reported on ESPN 1000, they were looking under every rock for a pitcher. Most of the time, that's going to be through the waiver wire. But as they got more desperate, they were calling other teams, which you're normally doing anyway. And you're saying things like, okay, we'll probably need some pitching. We'll talk to you again in July. But as the injuries started to pile up, it was like, okay, David Peterson, for example, we have some interest. Robbie Ray, we have some interest. Marlins, we have some. Whoever it is, they put it out to everybody. And then you circle back when, one, the team is ready to sell, or in this case, you get desperate enough that you make an early trade, which means in June or early July. This was late June. So that's how it went down. It wasn't like 6 weeks of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It was calling all these teams, telling them we might be interested earlier than normal, then having a couple more injuries and saying earlier than normal has appeared and getting that done. So I don't know who else is on their radar right now. It's probably not going to be anybody for another month. They picked up a guy. Boyd's back. Tyon's about to be back. So as we get closer to August, I can tell you who they're zeroing in on. But have they talked to every team that has available pitching or will have available? Yes, absolutely they have. Some of those teams are going to fall off because they're not going to sell. Some of them will get more serious, and that'll happen closer to the deadline. So the Peterson thing was like, hey, let me know when you're ready. 6 weeks later, we're ready, done, let's do it. And it worked on the Mets side because Peterson was sent to the bullpen, became very expendable for them.
And then our last one, Derek asks, he says, if players or you could add a banana ball rule, what would it be?
Oh, that's easy. Fans can catch a foul ball and it's an out.
There you
How
go.
How awesome would that be? That would put your home crowd would be on its toes for every pitch. If you could help out your team by catching a foul ball and it counts as an out, how incredible would that be? Of course, everybody would have a glove, right? And you'd have to catch it cleanly. You can't like bounce it up to your guy next to you. Like there'd have to be some definitive rules about it. Some guy in the upper deck wins the World Series because he catches the third out. Come on, Jack.
Yeah, well, we also saw the Steve Bartman situation. I don't know, once that guy drops that foul ball and it gets on TV, well, then yeah,
think about that.
Poor fan.
If it did count and you dropped an easy one, yep, you would turn into Steve Bartman.
100%. 100%.
Oh, God. I'd love the whole city of Chicago after you, Jack. I really would. Be very funny.
Yeah. Yep. No doubt.
All right. That's it for the mailbag. Make sure you drop your comments in the YouTube section and tweet Jack there for our next one. We'll talk to you next week. Hopefully have a guest on the show as well. Cubs are rolling. Hope you've enjoyed the episode Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers.